Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This episode is kindly sponsored by Papier. Papier offers a bespoke collection of customizable stationery created in collaboration with artists, tastemakers, and brands. They use sustainably sourced FSC certified papers. Whether you're perking yourself up with a new planner or looking for a set of thank you cards, Papier will have the design for you. I absolutely love using the site as a way to personalize birthday cards for my friends and family. You can upload your favorite photos to make cards feel extra special. I'm also a big fan of their wellness journals as a way to note down any reflections and musings about things like my meditation and my water intake and my sleep. All the Small Things listeners can get 15% off their first order. Just enter the code Venetia15 at checkout. Thanks very much to Papier. Hello and welcome back to the show. Venetia here, and this week I am joined by the best teacher in the world. Andrea Zafiraku is an art and textiles teacher at Alperton Community School in Brent, one of the world's most ethnically diverse places. She has worked her entire teaching career of 14 years at Alperton and was promoted to deputy head of art within a year of her arrival. She is now Associate Deputy Head Teacher, leading on staff professional development. In 2018, Andrea won $1 million when she was crowned the best teacher in the world by the Varkey Foundation. Using that prize money, she founded a charity called Artists in Residence with an aim to improve arts education in schools. Andrea's brand new book, Those Who Can Teach, What It Takes to Make the Next Generation, is an inspiring story about what it takes to work on the front lines of education today, a call for people to value the arts in state education, as well as a powerful reminder that a teacher ready to listen can transform a person's life. I am so thrilled to have Andrea on the show with me today. Let's get into it. Well, firstly, Andrea, hello. I'm so excited to chat to you, and I'm just so delighted that you're on this podcast. Welcome to All the Small Things.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Seriously, this is just like brilliant. I'm looking forward to this chat.
Now, let's crack on. I actually read recently in The Guardian that you're at work every single day by 7:30 a.m. So I would like to know everything that happens before you get to school. What do your mornings at home look like?
The buzzer, I think the snooze goes on about 3 or 4 times. Like, oh my God, get out, get out. I could probably get kicked by my husband. Get out now. It's actually quite calm in the mornings because I don't have to worry about the kids. They are managed by my husband. Which is brilliant. So I can just wake up, just do my, you know, get ready, go downstairs, cup of tea, out the door, done, in school, listen to the music on the way in. And it's all quite calm. You go into school at 7:30 and the car park is nearly packed anyway. So you're just trying to keep, you know, just trying to get a space in the car park is my mission in the morning.
I have read about your energy levels, which I am very, very delighted to say are exactly what I expected. You have a lot of energy. Are you a caffeine person? Are you a breakfast person? Or is this just all you?
Good question. I think just all me. Although I love my tea, I love my coffee, you know, bring on the chocolate. I think I literally shut down and stop when I'm in my bed, which is quite nice. that's my zone. That's my do not disturb zone.
I'm also really interested to know how ingrained the school calendar and timetable are in the way you live your life, because I haven't been at school for a very, very, very long time, 13 years, and yet I still count September as my new year. I still find myself having a break at 10:50 in the morning, every morning. So yeah, how ingrained is that timetable in how you live your life?
It's ridiculous. It takes over your life. I mean, you know, these half terms that our teachers get and we love, we're still up at 6 o'clock when the buzzer goes. That's when our body clock is up. I think it takes us a couple of weeks in the summer holiday just to get that out of our system. But it's so ingrained. You're so right. You're looking at the watch. Oh my God, I've got to be on duty now. Oh my God, I've got to go down to the bus. Oh my God, the kids are coming out. Bus stop time. Come on, let's go outside. So it's, oh God, you picked this up. This is a teacher thing. All teachers get this. But yeah, the routine is ingrained. Yeah, every single minute is counted for in the day.
Mm. I can imagine in school holidays, you must get this little like wave of panic when you're like, shit, I've had a lie-in, and actually it's fine. It's the holidays.
It's that's the hooray. It's like, yay, I'm on my school holiday. Let me just cry. There's always a thing, I don't know if you know about it, but it's the Sunday before. So the Sunday night before you go back to school, nobody sleeps. There's like this anxiety thing, or this I can't sleep because I'm so excited thing, or will I sleep from my alarm clock thing, that I would say 99% of teachers in this country have it, the Sunday night no sleep thing.
Oh yeah. My gosh. I had a Sunday night no sleep thing last night, so maybe that's leftover from school. I would love to wind back the clocks a little bit and hear about your upbringing and your roots, because I know you're Greek Cypriot, and yeah, I'd just love to hear about where you grew up and how that experience was for you and what your kind of strongest memories are.
It's really interesting. I don't think until winning the award, actually, I'm very proud to be Greek Cypriot and come from, and have my culture behind me. But I don't think I've ever been so proud about my culture, my heritage, as I have been, or been more aware of it. It's the whole kind of family, it's the whole kind of food, it's the whole kind of in your face, it's the noise, it's the pride, it's the funny things that you can kind of hear. So like my grandmother would say, in Greek, let's go to Marks and Spence, and that's Marks and Spence's, or let's have fishingers, so that's fish fingers for afternoon tea after school. It's just, I think it's just brought so much richness in my life. I lived across the road from my parents, so that, yeah, the one big fat Greek family thing is just, that is my life. So it's huge, it's massive, and I love it. I love it. I don't imagine it being any other way. And the reason why it's so important to me is that I can see the difference with students who have got that kind of family unit behind them, that kind of that richer community, to those who haven't experienced it. And those who haven't, it's, you know, there's a loss there. There's a massive gap, which you're just like, oh man, I can, now I know why you're like that. Now I know why you haven't, you know, you feel isolated, or you feel kind of angry, or, you know, you don't feel like you're cared for, because you haven't got that kind of unit of that community behind you. People, young people who do have this kind of family and community background, this really rich connection, they just feel happier and more secure. I don't know, maybe I could be wrong, but that's what I've noticed.
I would love to hear what one of your most inspiring memories from right at the start of your teaching career is, because there are just so many like unbelievably inspiring stories in your book, and I know you have a lot of them. So I'm wondering, what one might have been right at the start of your teaching career.
The one that comes to mind is, it's in the book, really. It's the story of the student who, against all odds, got a GCSE grade in arts. And so this is the kid who parents said, the background is he came from a special educational needs school, and his parents said, we just want him to blend in and to go into a normal school. And I was really scared to know, how do I teach a child like this? How do I teach a child who's got so many different types of special educational needs labels? There's no way I could, you know, push him on. There's no way I could teach him or to get him to pass a grade. And just knowing that already, that kind of that defeatness, that the fact that his parents gave up and I gave up, and yet at the end of a very long year and a half, this kid just blew us away with his amazing talents. And, you know, he was so at home in the art room, and he just overcame everything. He broke the ceilings. He shone. And from that moment, I just promised myself I was never, ever going to judge a child again and listen to those people that say he can't. Yeah, I think that's the story.
I just want to say congratulations on your amazing book.
Thank you. Did you read
honestly,
it?
I've read the whole thing front to back, and it's fantastic. It's fantastic. I just thought it was really inspiring, really heartwarming, really encouraging, but also like a very important kind of call to arms. Like, I just think it's amazing. It reminded me of This Is Going to Hurt. And I think the impact that This Is Going to Hurt by Adam Kay had on our perception, obviously this was before COVID, our perception of the NHS and the health system. I feel like your book is going to be that for the school system. I just think it's amazing.
Oh my God, God bless you. God bless you. And thank you for saying that. When I was first approached to write a book, my initial response was, why? I'm so boring. My life is boring. I'm a teacher. I just do what every other teacher in the world does. And I think that's what's so special about it. The fact that it's not necessarily about my life, but it really focuses on what happens in a classroom in an inner city London school. And it's the same stories that I bet every single teacher who teaches in inner city schools experience. It's the same kids that we have in front of us. And it's just a celebration of them. It's a celebration of these students. And also what teaching really is, because I don't think anyone realizes it's not just about going in, teaching your subject. It's the other stuff that we have to do, the other things that we have to kind of always be focused on, you know, the well-being, the mental health, the, you know, have they eaten, the parenting, all of that, which just adds pressure to a young person and how they access their education. So yeah, I'm so happy to hear your feedback. I'm really proud of it, really, really proud of it. And everyone who's read it so far have really connected with it and said, I like the part where you spoke about this child because this child was really similar to my best friend, or I went through the same experiences. And that's powerful, man. You're just like, wow.
Yeah, you should feel so proud, honestly. I think it's just brilliant. And it actually reminds me of a quote that you say in the book. You say, should the government want to understand and improve the lives of today's school children, ministers need to speak to teachers. Instead of asking what changes need to be made in the curriculum, the government should ask us what kids' lives look like in the 21st century, about their mental health issues, self-harming, or about going hungry, or about the abuse they witness at home. This is the information that is not captured by the facts and figures they demand from schools, and yet it is the nuts and bolts of what we deal with every single day. So I would love to hear about the shortcomings of the government's target-based approach, because you do talk about this in the book.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I mean, ever since I can remember, my life has just been about trying to kind of make sure that every child reaches their target grade, and their target grade is based on a number which has been taken, put into a computer system, algorithms gone a bit crazy, and then hey presto, this child, at the end of 5 years in your care, should come out with this GCSE grade. And I've really struggled with that, because with that, they've not thought about their postcode, where they live, perhaps, their own kind of background in terms of where they've come from, what pressures they have from parents, what's the socioeconomic climate which they're facing. They're not taking that into account. And I'm really, really gutted about that. And I think this is why I've always kind of felt really pressured about the arts. The fact that the arts, there's something quite exceptional which we do in our classrooms. We're able to really kind of prove everyone wrong. We're able to just say to the world, to, you know, the leaders, to the government, to say, well, actually, this child who you had predicted to have got nothing at the end of their 5 years stay with us, have now got a GCSE, or have got a higher GCSE than expected. And that's because our subject has really transformed them. Our subject has really helped them become more comfortable, more confident, helped them to access the curriculum. So it's really about the reality. Sometimes I really feel that the people who are making the decisions have got no idea, have got no idea. And because of COVID, I think that's come really, really to light. Some of the decisions that have been made are like, what? They really expect us to do that. So it's...
Can you give me an example of that?
Well, it's about, you know, this whole... Right, for example, this whole testing thing. I don't know, apart from the army, of course, but I don't know which other profession would have pulled that incredible ask off. The fact that they expected secondary schools to test their students for COVID, to make sure that our schools are COVID safe completely, to still deliver outstanding lessons, to make sure that our children's welfare is intact, to do all of that while still delivering a really strong curriculum and being held account to that as well. And having the pressures of Ofsted lingering behind us saying, oh, we could come in at any time, you know. So I just feel that sometimes our voice is not valued or what really happens is not valued. It's enough's enough. Mm-hmm. Enough is enough, yeah.
Some of the kind of most teary moments I found with your book was when you gave stories about how the arts and your lessons and being able to teach these children art had literally got them from a place of not communicating, not being able to look you in the eyes, not being able to make friends, not being able to speak out loud, you know. And then the arts and doing art helps them get to a place where they can communicate, where they can have friends, where they're suddenly being asked to be quiet in the classroom. Like, it's a complete 180. And I just think being so grades focused doesn't, like you say, it like detracts from that incredible work that you've managed to get a student whose first language isn't even English to then become one of the loudest, most creative people probably in this school year. I just think that is amazing.
No, and it's a reality. I mean, I'll give you an example. We've got some students now who are applying to go to Oxford or Cambridge, the Russell Group universities, and they have got the most amazing grades you can think of. You know, they're the top kids you can think of. But when it comes to little things like interview techniques or being able to talk or just to communicate, they really lack these skills. And these are the skills where, you know, whether you like it or not, in subjects like drama, in subjects like music, in the arts, you are going to have to be faced with these skills. You're going to have to really come up, because these are the subjects that push you to communicate and to talk about yourself, why you have done this, why it's important to you. And this is what I think, why I think the arts are underestimated and devalued for that particular reason.
How do you think the government could improve the arts education in the UK?
I get asked this question quite a lot, and I really struggle. I'm really kind of thinking, well, what is the answer? Is there a quick fix? I don't think there is a quick fix, but there's loads of things that we can start thinking about and putting into place. For example, we have this kind of thing in this country whereby we like putting everything into a box. So if you like science, that's that box there. Maths, that's that box there. Arts, that box there. Humanities, that box there. Sports, that box there. So instead of thinking these subjects in a way that they could be actually holistic, and they can work together, we just segregate everyone and put labels on them. Now, if you think about some of this, that some of the communities and incredible work that's happening on the continent, and if you think about our role models like Da Vinci, like Einstein, who there wasn't any limitations. Da Vinci was a scientist and he was an artist, celebrated in equal rights. So why are we doing this? Why are we just labeling subjects to be better than others? Let's just completely scrap that. Let's think about a curriculum which is really blended, which is, you know, it just works across all different types of skills and specializations. I would also think about the EBAC. And how have you used the EBAC? Did you study the EBAC?
I didn't. I did GCSEs and then A-levels.
Right. So have you ever seen an application form that says, have you studied the EBAC?
I don't think so.
Exactly. It does. Exactly. Exactly. Your application form for a job will be, what are your GCSEs? What are your A-levels? What have you studied? That's it. And I think this is where I think there is so much present on this thing called the EBAC, which is just a group of subjects. And why do we need to pressurize our students to believe that by studying these groups of subjects, that will make them better off in their future? I don't know. I just think it's not fair. It's not right.
That's a really good answer. Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
I'd love to know how well you think the UK government, I know we've kind of touched on it, but maybe we could go into it in a little bit more depth. How well do you think the government caters to a diverse student population?
See, that's really interesting because I don't know the other end of it. I've always lived in a very kind of multicultural community, multicultural society. I've always seemed to work in a very multicultural school. So I'm not sure what it would look like on the other, in the other, I don't know, lenses or with the other glasses on. However, I would like to think there was much more emphasis on raising the profile of Black Afro-Caribbean achievement, of Asian achievement in our society, getting some really brilliant role models visible, with bad stories and good stories so that our young people can really celebrate themselves and identify with themselves. And I think it's really important that we just focus on the women and girls and make sure that they are, and you know, we are goddesses, you and I, as you know, but just making sure that every girl feels really respected, valued, and honored in her household and in school. I think that's just a really great way of getting things at an equal level, as it were.
I love that. It's been a terrible period in the UK when it comes to making sure that all school children's needs are met. In your book, you explain that you have taken a child to Asda before to buy them a decent uniform, which you paid for out of your own pocket. How do you feel about issues like this and the free school meals debacle, for example?
Yeah, I mean, it's, oh God, it's just so unfair. It's so unfair what our young people have to tolerate and put up with, even though where they shouldn't. You know, come on, what kind of a country is this? You know, we're so, you know, there is money in our country. No child should be left hungry. No child should be left experiencing poverty, experiencing neglect. It should not exist. And it really frustrates me. Now, with my stories, I honestly have not been trying, I wrote my stories not trying to prove that I'm amazing. I wrote my stories because I wanted to prove that these lives exist, that these hardships exist, And the bureaucracy sometimes to make a difference is hard. The level of free school meals, that boundary where a family has got to apply for free school meals, it is, you know, if they're one penny over, they're not eligible. Or actually, it's harmful. It's for their health, for the young people's health, if they're one penny over. So I just think so much more needs to go into it, into the whole kind of looking at that social response structure.
I think COVID revealed or shone a light on a lot of the injustices that were very much there. I think the whole population was just up in absolute arms last year when it was so clear that we had so much money and yet the government were letting kids go hungry. It was just so heartbreaking. It's been a year since the start of COVID. I'm wondering if you've had time to kind of reflect on some of the challenges that you faced over the past year and perhaps if there have been any kind of useful learnings from the time as well?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. There's been some really great moments. First of all, having the opportunity, and this is the first lockdown, just to stop and pause and think, oh my God, you know, I work 20 hours a day, you know, I don't stop, I don't reflect. And sometimes having that chance just to stop and then see, right, how can we, let's just problem solve, let's just put things into action. What can we do? How can we deliver this? What is it? And I thought that was great in terms of helping school leaders to think of solutions themselves. Because at the end of the day, we've never experienced anything like this, no one. And I think the resilience of schools, the resilience of teachers is just epic in this country, amazing. I've learnt that I hate teaching online. So I can honestly say I hate teaching online. However, I have had, you know, when you kind of go into autopilot. So I've been teaching for 15 years and it's almost stayed in that same way. I've used the same resources I've used for 10 years because they worked, they were great. But because of COVID and having to move from my amazing physical, gorgeous classroom into a screen, a 14-inch screen, and having to think about, oh my God, how am I going to keep their attention span for an hour? What activities can they do in their houses? What artists can I do that can really inspire them? Do they have resources? How am I going to engage them? Oh my God, they've just had 4 hours of online learning and they've got art period 5. They're going to be dead. You know, so it's that was what my thinking was like. And I loved it. I liked the fact that I was pushed out of my comfort zone, that I had to really think about the structure of my lessons, like keeping it short, sharp, have it put in breaks in the middle, getting them just to stand up, walk away from the screen, just thinking about different ways of good quality teaching, new ways. And I think because of that, I've upskilled, I've learned better systems. And I could say that I'm a little bit more kind of confident with tech, but don't hold your breath. But yeah, I think that's been really great. What I've also learned is that there's some kids who I'd call them the ghosts, really, the ones who are so quiet in school and almost invisible when you've got a 1,700 population school. But during COVID, because their environment was solid and secure, these kids just thrived. They loved it. They work independently. They just can kind of, they like the systems, they like the structures, and they were just flying. They wanted more work, more work, more work.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Honestly, it was amazing. Really, really powerful. And so my challenge now is to make sure that those kids, now that they've come back to that really big kind of classroom, lots of people in there, that they still feel that they are achieving, that level of progress, that momentum is still there, that they don't start disappearing back into those little ghost worlds. That's what really was an eye-opener, in a really positive way, actually, for me.
That is so, so interesting. I hadn't thought of that. And that's really, really interesting to hear about. I just want to mention your tweet joking about the government's cyber ad, which I'll actually link in the episode
I just
notes.
I mean, what idiots? What? How could you do that? What are you? Yeah. Sorry, carry on. Finish your question. Sorry.
Well, I can describe it. It was a picture of a ballerina, and it says Fatima's next job could be in cyber. She just doesn't know it yet. And your tweet said, for all our budding ballerinas out there, please ignore this advert and live your dream. We need you to be you, which I of course absolutely loved. Are you worried about the effect that COVID will have had on the arts education in the UK?
Absolutely, I am worried. I'm worried because of silly messages like that. It's meant that our young people and who want to do the arts, they're thinking, well, maybe there's no job because, you know, many of the museums have had to close, many of the theatres have had to close. And what have the dancers, the singers, what have they done during that time? So they may be having to think about looking for new careers. And that for me is just, that blew me away. That made me so sad. What we should be doing is really helping these individuals by thinking of other platforms that we can support them into showcasing and to carrying on the amazing work they do. You know, just really thinking outside the box, thinking what skills do these young people have, right? How can we connect them? How can we connect these incredible dancers with our young people in our schools? What can we do? I think automatically, once again, we just went heavy on the science and not really thought about the way that we use our language for the people who it's in them. The arts are in you. They're absolutely in you. They're part of your body. They're a DNA. You can't just cut it off. You can't switch it off. It's there. It makes you happy. It's your air. It's how you breathe. It's your oxygen. Why are we telling people to start suffocating? I don't get it.
Mic drop. Loved that. Thank you. I loved that. I love what you said.
Oh, I'm just getting really frustrated.
I completely agree.
No, you made me think about that. I'm just thinking, again, what is the mentality of some of these people in these roles? I mean, anyway, there you go.
It just makes you feel quite sad, doesn't it, really? It makes me feel sad because obviously it's coming from people who like have no connection to that space and really just don't understand it and also don't like are empathy free almost, like just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, yeah.
I would love to talk a little bit about children's mental health. We exist so heavily in online spaces these days and have been, especially over lockdown, like we spoke about, which is why I really appreciated the kind of nuance you brought to the digital teaching. I found it interesting when you talked about cyberbullying in your interview on Scandinavian talk show Skavlan. Mm-hmm. And in your book, you share concerns about the impact smartphones are having on our relationships with our families and children. I'd love to hear you discuss this issue a little bit more because I only started using Facebook when I was in my late teens. Instagram didn't come into my life until like my early 20s. And I can't imagine how it would have affected me if it had existed when I was much younger. So yeah, I'd just love to hear your thoughts on all things social media, tech and kids.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. All right, let me give you an example. This should give it away. So I love The Voice, you know, I love the UK. I love watching The Voice on
the
Saturday.
TV show. Okay.
Yeah. I love watching The Saturday Voice. I love it. I mean, it was like a massive family thing. Whatever happens, we are watching The Voice. And I really, I'm delighted that Craig won. And so I went into school the next day and I was teaching my year eights and I said, guys, who watched The Voice? Craig won. And they all looked at me as if to say, what are you talking about, miss? Like, well, what's The Voice? What program is it? And I was like, come on, guys, who watched The Voice? Out of 30 kids, two kids put their hands up. And I'm like, well, what do the rest of you do? Miss, we game. We game. I'm like, what do you mean? We game. And, you know, we're all online at the same time. We game together. And I just thought, bloody hell. Sorry. I don't know if I could. I just thought, oh, my God. Oh, my God, bloody hell. I thought, you know, they're just into this gaming thing, which is, I know it's incredible. It's stimulating. It's created by designers. It's amazing, but it's addictive. And they kind of, this is my biggest concern, the fact that because this is what entertains them, there will be huge issues in the future in terms of how they socialize. Now, social media, I mean, it's not just about social media, but things like WhatsApp groups and chat groups and things like that, that's actually killed us kill teachers in school, because what happens is, as a parent, you know, you say to a parent, where is your child? Oh, he's safe. He's upstairs. He's not on the streets. But then you say, but what's he doing upstairs? Oh, he's on his computer. What's he doing on his computer? What's he looking at? Who is he playing with? You know, well, who is he listening to? What's his go-to? And I think this is the danger, the fact that we don't actually know what is happening to our student, to our kids, who is drawing them in, what's fascinating them, who they're trying to kind of feel that they can connect with, their identity. And it scares me. It really scares me. Sometimes you feel like, you know, when they're out playing in, you know, playing in the parks and whatever, yeah, you feel scared, but at least you can see that they're in a park and they're with a human being. But when they are online, you don't know who is on the other end. And that frightens me. Yeah. But on the other hand, sorry, there's trying to be optimistic. You know, with these amazing influencers, which we have in our world, yours are truly, of course, it's lovely to also know that sometimes they can connect, they find people they can connect with who represents who they want to be, you know, and sometimes people like yourself, you're the voice of them and you're the role model. And they would never have been able to find that person had it not been for social media or a career or something. Oh, wow, you're doing that. That's a career. You know, so I think that's been quite inspiring as well. So it's mostly cons, but there is some benefits from this new world that we're seeing.
I think those are great reflections. The charity you founded with the 1 million you won for your award, Artists in Residence, just sounds absolutely amazing. Oh. So please, can you tell us a little bit more about why you started it and what your hopes are for the next year?
So I was asked whether or not I wanted to be the poster girl for education. And I decided to turn that down.
This is the opening of your book, which just like sucks you in, that story. I was like,
this is always that. You know, there's like moments in your life where you have to kind of have those 10% braver conversations. And I remember the first one was when I was in year 9 in school, when I had to tell my parents I want to do art GCSE. That was it. The second one was telling my parents I wanted to actually, you know, I've fallen in love with a person from Africa. So that was, you know, mixed race relationships, very, very tricky in my community. And then the third one was this conversation. So I had to turn down a really, you know, unique, prestigious offer of being kind of like a poster girl for the DfE. And the reason why I turned this job, this kind of opportunity down, was because, once again, you know, my big heart thinking, Andrea, you know, this is a government that don't like the arts in education. You can't be a poster girl and have all those art teachers, you know, really feel saddened about you. So I basically then thought, what can I do with this money to, because $1 million is a headache, man. What can you do with this money to make a difference? And it's what we were talking about earlier about those role models. So having those artists come into schools to say, this is what I do. And it's about that. So it's creating opportunities for professional artists of all backgrounds to come into schools in deprived areas of the country to do projects with young kids, to really help to kind of inspire them about the careers in arts, about arts education, with the hope that they can then possibly feel that they could then want to take up GCSE or A-level art, or just be creative individuals, to appreciate creativity. And that's what we do. And we're really good at it. And I'm so happy. And I love what we do. It's brilliant. It's really good.
Amazing. I love that. Thank you. How would you feel about a quick fire round?
Bring it, girl. Bring it on.
Let's do it. Quick fire with Andrea. Breakfast, lunch or dinner?
Dinner.
Tea or coffee?
Ah, tea. Earl Grey. Yeah.
In the trees or by the sea?
By the sea.
Watercolours or oil paints?
Oh, that is a hard one. I'd say oil paints.
Hand sewing or sewing machines?
Oh, that's not fair. Hand sewing.
Early mornings or lions?
Lions.
Spring or autumn?
Autumn.
Sunrise or sunset?
Oh, nice. Sunrise.
Podcasts or Netflix?
Oh, I'm so sorry about Netflix.
I'm the same. Films or books?
Films. Yeah.
Routine or spontaneity?
Spontaneity.
And finally, early night or night owl?
Night owl.
A couple of questions to round up. What lifts your soul?
Family, love, happiness.
Joy, I love that. What is your one non-negotiable daily self-care habit?
At least 2 cups of tea.
Great answer. In the same interview I mentioned earlier with The Guardian, you said, I don't watch TV. I don't ever even go into my living room. Even in my lunch, I'm working. The only time I break is when I'm in my bed. When you do have time to wind down, how do you spend that time?
It would be watching a movie. Yeah.
Love that.
Couch, movie, popcorn. I can't wait for the cinemas to be open.
Oh my gosh, me too.
I can't wait. That's my one thing. There's 2 things I'm going to do the moment I come, that when things are open again. Number one is go and visit a masseuse because I need my whole body cracked and whatever. Number two is going to the cinema.
What are your cinema snacks? Do you get the same thing every time?
Right, so it's like I always go with my 2 girls. So what we do, we have kind of like our popcorn. So one of them likes sweet, the other one likes sweet and salty. I like sweet and salty, but in my sweet and salty has got to be a packet of Maltesers.
Oh, that is the actual dream. I love that.
That's amazing. I know. It's just I should literally do something about that. I should kind of brand that. But yeah.
What one small thing would you like listeners to try out or think about when it comes to thinking about the education system?
Oh. Right. Here you go, guys. This is what I'd like you to do. I would like you to find your favorite teacher who has taught you throughout your lives, the one teacher who made a massive difference in your life. And I want you to find that person to find that person and to contact them to say, hi, miss, it's so-and-so. Can you remember me? You taught me da-da-da-da. And I just want to say thank you for da-da-da-da-da-da. That's what I want you to do, guys. Reach out to your favorite teacher. Send them a little message to say, thank you, I remember you. Because we need that. We really would love to hear back from you, and it will just help us keep going and just riding through this really tough wave.
I will be writing to Mrs. Reed, my drama teacher, this evening. Thank you. And finally, what is one thing you hope your future self will have achieved?
Oh, I am so lucky where I am, what I've achieved so far. I'm so, so, so lucky. I've been blessed with the people around me, the opportunities around me. What I want to achieve is at some point in about the next kind of 20 years, not sooner, 20 years, is just reflecting and looking at my girls, my own daughters, and seeing them being happy, fulfilled, really strong women who are just kind of like taking on the world in their own rights. That's what I want to see. The fact that my own girls are just like killing it in their world. They're just like smashing it. And yeah, that would make me really happy.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I think that's a great place to end. And thank you so much, Andrea, for being on this podcast. I'm very, very grateful for you and your time.
Oh, I've loved this. Can we do it again? It's
yes.
So much fun. Thank you. Loved this so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please do share it with a pal or on Instagram, tagging the show at ATST Podcast and me at Venetia Lamanna. And I'll see you back here next Tuesday for a brand new episode.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.